You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday, welcome to Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hoping everything's good with you wherever you are. I have to tell you that I got a few. It kind of surprised me. I got a few emails yesterday about I was talking about shipboard life and how. The home isolation thing reminds me of being on ship or being deployed, where you develop a routine and so and I and they thanked me for, you know, for talking about that, and I was honestly I'm a little bit surprised, but anyway. For those of you that are struggling with being shut in, the key to it is a little bit of self-discipline. Now, I know that that doesn't go over well a lot of times, but it is one of the things you learn is that, you know, when you get on ship, and I was aboard a aircraft carrier, guard nuclear weapons for 2 years. And so you're part of the ship's company, is what it's known. You're not an embarked troop. Like a lot of Marines get on ships for a short period of time and go places, right? When you're assigned to one, it's different. That's where you live. That's where you work. You're there. When it goes to sea, you go to sea. And so that was really my first taste of, you know, deployed life for extended periods of time. And we were gone. Of the 2 years I was on the ship, I want to say we were gone 15 or 16 months. Yeah, we were gone a lot. And so I had already deployed to Okinawa, you know. And you know, that was we were on the island most of the time. So we were training. So it wasn't different than my life a whole lot at Pendleton, other than, you know, not being able to, you know, go home at night and talk to the people you love. You had to, you know, you had to write letters, and you'd write a letter, and you'd get an answer. You know, your letter would take a week to get there, a couple of days to answer, and then a week to get back. So, you know, maybe if everything went fast and according to plan, you could get an answer in 2 to 3 weeks if you asked a question about what was going on. And so, but anyway, when I went to sea. You know, you learn that there's your choices, your entertainment choices were limited. So you had to say, okay, how do I get the most out of this? And because this is going to be your life. And when we went to sea in 1987, after the USS Stark got hit in the Persian Gulf, I was aboard the USS Ranger. So we went to sea, and we were at sea for 106 straight days. Yeah, we went to see, and we stayed there. And, you know, there's a couple times we were supposed to head towards ports, but those things got canceled because of things that were going on in the Persian Gulf. And so we did the whole deployment at the off the coast of Iran for almost 4 months. Yeah. And so I mean, literally Groundhog Day. And you develop, the key is to develop a routine. And, you know, Colleen's here with me this week, and we kind of have a routine. You know, in the morning, you know, I do the show, and she does her, you know, she gets on and she does classes, right? So they do classes online, right? And they do it by, I think, some by Zoom, some by Microsoft Team. And so when I see that she's on, I always go get in the picture, right? I stick my head in the background. I start looking around. She thinks it's funny, right? And anyway, all the other kids are sitting there bored. You can see all their pictures on the screen, right? And they all look bored as shit, right? They're just sitting there. And with the teacher, you know, in the middle talking to everybody. So anyway, so then by about 1 o'clock, I get out of here for a while. And I head to the backyard and I go work out. And so I'll put the news on. I'll work out, get in the sun. I have like a gym in my backyard. And which has proved fortuitous. And so take advantage of that. And then Colleen will come out and she'll work out. And then I kind of relax for a little bit. And then I look to write in the late afternoon, early evening. And then we watch on Amazon Prime. We're watching, what's her name? I watched her last night. The family went to the Catskills. I don't know. I don't know if anybody is listening to this that ever went to the Catskills and watches. Hold on. I'll tell you the name of the show that I watch. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, right? And they're Jewish, and they go to the Catskills. And the rest of the show is pretty historically accurate, right? Life in New York, Life in the Village, Lenny Bruce. I mean, you know, pretty, I'm sure parts of it are embellished, but pretty historically accurate for the late 50s, early 60s, you know, when this takes place, 1959, I think they're at now. And so, but if anybody knows, is that like that hokey stuff, is that really accurate? Did they actually, is that the way it was? Because it's hilarious, right? The whole Camp Winnipesaukee, and the whole family goes and they stay in the lodge, and they've been going for 27 years and they're up there for 2 months or a month or whatever the hell they are. It's amazing. It's honestly, it's amazing. And again, there's a huge piece of it is the Jewish culture, which is very funny. And so Colleen and I will watch that and then we'll fall asleep and get up and do it again the next day. And so, I think that, I mean, you have to set a routine and you have to be disciplined about it. And then you have to, you know, so if I don't, like when I work out, if I'm not watching the news, I throw on an audiobook, right? And so I have a goal to get through X number of books. And so to me, it's you know, there's an opportunity in your confinement, you know, and I think those of us who've been confined before for extended periods of time understand how to do it. So honestly, for me, it's not a big adjustment. I mean, I've done it in my life. You know, I've done it in Iraq. I've done it in Afghanistan, where you conform your life to, you know, your confined situation, and you learn how to, you know, make it work. And so, but I mean, for a lot of people, and I think the problem is to do it on an extended basis. Now, if they were asking you to fake it, right? Can you fake this for, you know, for a little while? Yeah, I can fake it for a few days. Well, that's not what people are asking you. They're asking you to do it for months. So, you know, they're asking you to deploy. And so not the easiest thing in the world to do if you've never done it. So anyway, I would encourage you. You can do it. All right? You can do it. But you do have to sit down and, You know, maybe embrace a little bit of self-discipline in a way that you've never really embraced it. And I mean, there's opportunities to be more fit. There's opportunities to be smarter. And you can watch, you know, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, or something like that. There's three seasons of it, don't you know? Yeah, we're in the middle of the second season. And Catherine even came over and watched it with us last night. So that's exciting. Jeff, Kenny, and Tim Lynch are going to join me today. So, and what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the interview that I did with, Mark Kansian. They'll kind of comment on that. And, the interview I did with, TX Hamas, and, they'll talk about that. And then the things that we've heard from, you know, I mean, the three of us know an awful lot of Marines, both active and retired. And, you know, these guys now, you people listen, you know, to that segment a fair amount. And so they get contacted by guys that are still on active duty, you know, friends that are retired, ask questions. And so that, you know, they hear a lot of stuff. And so, you'll hear, we'll talk about that too. So interesting discussion. We recorded it last night, and, so you'll hear it here in a little bit. And I would tell you, just as kind of a tease to that, you know, this framework that we're trying to create to evaluate where the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Berger, is taking the Marine Corps, right? You know, we're trying to do it dispassionately, even though we all have our own opinions about it. But let me tell you, by and large, right, the Commandant, this is my assessment, he's struggling to get support. There are not too many people that are coming out to support what he's doing. And so we'll talk about that. So that'll be next hour. I want to share with you a pretty interesting little email I got. So it's about China. Mac thoroughly enjoyed your discussion with Grant this morning. I do have a comment on his response to your question on what motive would China have to start a war with the United States. Grant referred to Germany's invasion of Russia as an irrational act. Certainly in hindsight, we can say that. But if you looked at the decision in the context of the 1941 German thought, it made sense in their minds. Hitler clearly spelled out in Mein Kampf that he and Germany were looking east to expand its territory and gain the resources needed for the superior Aryan race. Hitler and his generals all thought that the Soviet Untermenschen, which is their inferiority, would be routed in under 3 months. Similarly, Japan's war aims were also fueled by ultranationalists bent on territorial expansion to secure the territory resources necessary to drive Japan's industrial base. Like Germany, the Japanese saw themselves as racially superior and as a replacement for the white colonialists as they built their Greater East Asian Co-Prosperity Pact. They too expected the inferior Chinese and whites collapsing in the face of their perceived racial superiority. Like the Germans, they got a rude awakening and did not have a workable plan B. In both cases, territorial expansion fueled by views of racial superiority were key in driving military action. See, that's what I love about this program. Smart people listen. Mm-hmm. Not just dumbasses, but smart people listen. He goes on. While China does have territorial aspirations, I'm not sure that is China's primary aim. My understanding is that China seeks to replace the U.S. as the leading economy and world leader. I have a comment to make about that here in a minute. Is a military confrontation required to achieve that goal? I say absolutely not, and that's me talking, not him. He goes on, seems that they are doing pretty well at moving in that direction, using the diplomatic, economic, and information elements of national power, as you discussed with Grant. Why risk those advances by provoking a military confrontation? My question to Grant was, what was the big gain that China would make? He asked the same question. From the U.S. perspective, it wasn't that long ago in the 80s when the booming Japanese and German economies were seen potentially supplanting the U.S. economy as a world leader. We did have to go to war to beat back those economic challenges. My understanding is that China seeks to replace the U.S. as the leading economy and world leader. Now, I have this to say about that. What's interesting to me about the Chinese is you see the same play over and over again, right? One, what the Chinese have done is they developed the Chinese economy in particular. The disposable income of their citizens to buy products from all over the world. Okay, that's important. It allows other nations to sell into China, right? And so as you sell into China, as your manufacturing sector expands, more jobs, more money, and more, and important to the Chinese, more dependence on China. Now, when the Chinese then say, hey, the fishing rights thing, don't push that, all right? Unless you want us to pinch, right, the tube that fuels your economy, just let it go, all right? We'll fish where we want to, and please tell your fishermen to stay north or south of this line. That's how it goes, and that's how the extortion works. And so now, you know, there's questions about – you know, I don't think there's any, you know, any question, right, that China's responsible for what the world's going through. Will nations address that? That's the question. Will nations address that? Or will they play the continue to play the emperor's new clothes? If the Chinese can get the world to play the emperor's new clothes with this, that'll be pretty amazing. And it will, but it's just a very, very outward example of what it does on a whole range of issues relative to other nations' economic dependence and other nations' economic aspirations with China. Like, yeah, we're not really going to make a big deal of the coronavirus. Yeah, we know it came from them. We know they lied about it. We know they continue to lie about it. Right? I mean, I think, you know, there's a collective, you know, laugh when you think of, you know, the Chinese death toll relative to the Wuhan flu, right? And they say, you know, the United States went by China this week, right? There's your rim shot. And it's a joke. It's a joke. And so you see, you know, satellite technology saying, look at all these funeral urns, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them outside these places. These, you know, lines at funeral homes tell a different story. But anyway, so the question is, you know, why? So explain to me how a war gets started between the United States and China. And so I think that's, I still don't have a clear read on, you know. And then you'll hear people say, well, Mac, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we skip that and we go straight to the conflict. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So Kenny Lynch is going to join us. There's a bunch of news. I didn't do much of the news yesterday, so I probably should get to it today. And so we will do that. So good morning to you. Tim Lynch, Jeff Kenny join me talking about the Commandant of the Marine Corps. Yeah, and you're going to hear some interesting stuff because, it is not playing well in Peoria, and he's got different constituencies that he needs to worry about. And one is the retired general officers of the Marine Corps. And I did a commentary piece yesterday about that. You know, only one general was quoted in Michael Gordon's article, and that's General Zinni. And he didn't directly comment on what General Berger was doing because, you know, general officers aren't openly critical of each other in public. At least those are the rules, and most follow them. And Zinni does in the article. But as I said in the commentary, there's not one retired general officer in the article, and Gordon knows them all, that supports what General Berger is doing. And the only one that is quoted gives him a gentle nudge in the direction of past commandants who have steered a path of balance, being expeditionary, being the most bang for the buck financially, and being able to fight tonight. And the Marine Corps has got through all kinds of different challenges, to include, you know, the one true revolution, which was we're in the nuclear age. Not going to need conventional forces. We have nukes. Who's going to screw with us? And then the next thing you hear, it's like, all right, we need people to go to Korea. Wait a minute. What happened to the Air Force? And the Air Force does it all the time. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's become a thing of the past. And then all of a sudden somebody, you know, creates something that makes their technology irrelevant. Or somebody hides in the population and you can't get to them. So, yeah. So anyway, interesting conversation. You'll hear that. So good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Now, if you're struggling at home, whether it's with a daily routine or you're kind of bummed out that you can't go everywhere, okay, get outside today, okay, go for a walk. You can do that, okay, and then make a plan. Set some goals, right? At the end of the 60 days, you got to be a better person. So whatever those goals are, if they were to read more, if they were to clean your garage, if they were to weed the back flower bed, if they were to plant new plants, if they were whatever, you make that list, right? And you got to be disciplined. You got to be disciplined about what you eat. You got to be disciplined about exercise. You got to get some sleep and then stimulate your brain, okay? And more than sitting in front of the boob tube, okay? More than that. Okay, and if you do that, at some point, somebody's going to look at you and say, all right, you can go outside today. You can go see other kids. And this too shall pass. And let me tell you, I mean, I think that, you know, our national leaders don't want to get too excited over some of the data that's, you know, that's coming in. And I've had people yesterday, you know, forward me different articles about things. This morning, forwarded me different articles about things, and that the data, you know, is beginning to turn here in the United States. And it's going to, and what's, to me, what's most interesting, it's going to turn on a number of fronts. You have researchers saying that we're making breakthroughs relative to this virus and a vaccine, and which is ultimately the solution for it, right? You have doctors in different, you know, in different medical centers saying we've developed, you know, and oddly enough, whatever that drug is that the president mentioned, and then he got absolutely lambasted, saying that, you know, Trump is once again, you know, saying shit that's not true. Well, guess what? That drug combined with an antibiotic, I think, is proving to be, you know, I don't want to say a game changer, but it's proving to be substantial in as a treatment. And so those things are happening on a daily basis. And then the other thing I think is the stratification and the refinement of data. That you see, and I talked about that yesterday. I think you know, Governor Cuomo's press conferences, you know, that guy telling the rest of the nation that this is what's waiting for you, he's wrong. New York City and Newark and Connecticut, because they have so many people that make that commute, they're different. They are not the rest of the country. The rest of the country doesn't live like that. So, anyway, I got a whole series of those things. And I think it gives us all reason to be optimistic, and that, you know, maybe this thing will be shorter relative to longer, that maybe by May 1st, you know, we will not need to extend, you know, these things. We still will practice social distancing and be prudent about when these things, controls come off. But by that time, you ought to have the amount of testing, being that you can go to a doctor and get a test and the results in 15 minutes, that the doctor at that time can put you on, if the doctor needs to put you on, you know, medications that we have, you know, medications and treatments that, you know, that deal with this stuff. And then we can hopefully go about resuming our lives. So that'll be exciting. So just dedicated to everybody here who's struggling a little bit at home. There's a lot of people in your boat. So sit down, make a plan. And the plan is, I'm going to be on the ship for the next 60 days. And when I walk off this ship, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be more physically fit. I'm going to be smarter. I'm going to be a better person. So, and all those tools are at your disposal. You just got to look at them like that. And then you got to get into a routine, and then you stay in that routine. And that's how you get through 105 straight days at sea. That's how you get through a year's worth of a deployment. So you can do it. So it's dedicated to you.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible, and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather, then we'll take a break, then we'll check news. Currently, it is sunny and 55 in Northern Virginia, Quantico area. Sunny and 58 down the coast of Camp Lejeune. Sunny and 58 in 29 Palms. Clouds and 59 at Camp Pendleton. Dark cloudy 68 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Camp Butler in Okinawa, Shima. Dark cloudy in 64 in Afghanistan. It is dark cloudy 67. And early in the evening in Ramadi, it is partly cloudy, 73. Currently 61 and cloudy here in Southern California. Looking for high of 67 today, 67 tomorrow, and 67 on Saturday. All of our highs have been higher than that, though. So I think that might be wrong. Currently in Massachusetts, where Chris Cox is, solid cloud cover, 47 degrees and not getting any higher. Rain is coming through Saturday morning. High wind warning. R means it's real, boys. That's true. That's no shit. Watch means you're watching for it. Warning, because it's got an R in it. Real. 35 plus mile an hour winds through Saturday. Batten down the hatches, people. It's going to get wet and windy. So Cox is riding that out with his dog. And then yesterday, the weather from, I didn't read this, so this is a makeup from yesterday. It's bright and sunny in East Grand Forks, Minnesota today. Current conditions, now that's across the river from the chef, okay? The chef lives in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Across the river on the Minnesota side, it's East Grand Forks, Minnesota. So this is across the river from the chef. Sunny, high thin clouds today and a high of 47 degrees. Current winds are light and variable, gusts to 12 miles an hour. Wow. Rain moving in later, low tonight forecasted to be 25 degrees. We are in a winter storm watch. Thursday morning into Friday could get between 4 to 10 inches of wet, heavy snow. Talking freezing rain, sleet, then snow. We're also under a flood warning. Remember, R is real. The mighty Red River is forecasted to crest next Monday at around 45 feet. Flood walls are up along the Red River, but no roads are closed. Yeah, the Red River goes a lot higher than 45 feet. Flood stage means it's out of its banks. Yeah, you have to understand the technical terminology for flooding. And if you don't live near a river that floods, you won't understand it. So when a flood warning, that means the river's outside of its banks. Now the question is, how high is the river? Yeah, I think it doesn't get serious in that part of the country, in Grand Forks. What happened was the city flooded, right? Levees broke, the city flooded, city was on fire, downtown was on fire. Yeah, CNN covered it live as it was going on, right? Imagine city flooding and at night. and then downtown burning. So pretty dramatic pictures. So a lot of people remembered it. And so the city was, you know, helped out by a lot of federal aid. And then it took 10 years, but the city comes back. And so, you know, you got to be fluent in flood talk. And so what happened was, and the way, you know, there was parts of cities that couldn't be built on because they're, because the open areas were low-lying areas in the cities that flooded on an annual basis. Well, people began to build levees, and that's what happened in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And same thing on the Minnesota side. They built levees, and then they, you know, they claimed those areas, and they built houses in them. And when the levee gave way, all those houses got flooded. And so when the Army Corps of Engineers said, yeah, you know, and the federal government said, we'll do a study and we'll tell you what we'll do with the levees, because that's who builds them. And then, you know, you're going to have to demolish a lot of this housing. We're not going to build a levee where the old one got built. It's going to, we're going to give the river more room, which makes sense, right? So what they did was, between the two cities, they moved everything away from the river, you know, back. You know, there was a couple of city blocks on both sides of the river that got, you know, that got bulldozed. New flood walls and new levees went up, and to give the river more room to rise. And since then, you know, haven't had any real issues. So what the city of Grand Forks and East Grand Forks do is all their sandbag equipment, you know, they send it to other places in the state that are gearing up to fight the annual, you know, spring thaw. And, you know, a good spring thaw happens slowly. So the water migrates, it freezes at night, it migrates, it freezes at night, you know, and what you don't need is rain coupled with warmer temperatures, because that unleashes the snow melt and then dumps rain on top of that. And if you have extended versions of that, that's how you get big, big flooding. So, anyway, but the people there, I mean, they're used to it. It's something they do every spring. When you need sandbagging done, the high schools let out. The juniors and seniors go down the river and they sandbag. And it's kind of an annual ritual. Doesn't happen like that every year. Some years it's pretty moderate and you don't need those kids. So, but it's, but yeah, that's where Ruth Ann lives. So good luck, good luck. But if the, you know, the flood walls are up, but no roads are closed, that means you can get back and forth on the bridges across the river. When it gets serious is when they begin to close, you know, the entrances to the bridges, and they're not close to that yet. So anyway, yeah, Governor Cuomo, on TV. I think that, New York City is going to have some answering to do, when this is all said and done. New York City has to realize it is a different city than the rest of the nation because of its mass transportation system. And I would imagine that they'd already have learned that. It's surprising to me that, you know, that when other viruses, when other viruses have kind of gone through the world, that New York City hasn't looked at its own subway and seen this is the perfect communication device for these viruses. And we have to be sensitized, because when we get something that's really contagious, our subway system is going to be the thing that makes it an epidemic in our city like it won't be in other cities. So, again, I think Governor Cuomo is going to have a little bit to answer for. And I think if you understand that as a premise, you have to be quicker on the trigger. But the state of New York and the state of New Jersey, they were late on the trigger. Right? You had Washington and California both react before New York and New Jersey did. And so I think he's going to have a fair amount to answer for at the end of this in terms of, you know, and I don't mean politically. I mean about his decision making. And then, you know, putting together a blueprint for the next time this happens. And New Yorkers are going to have to understand that, you know, that because of the way we are configured geographically, we don't have the luxury of being more spread out and less on top of each other in terms of population density, and in particular because of, we're so dependent on our mass transportation system. It is the way that you get around in New York City, and there's no two ways about that. So anyway, I don't think, and again, the other thing is him getting on and talking to the rest of the country every day on in his morning press conference. I think his the information that applies to New York City does not apply to the rest of the country. So anyway, just a thought. More Ballman Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We'll be right back. Now, I've gotten the following email a few times over the course of the last few days, so I'll read this one to you. Not to be a COVID denier, but I agree about New York, New Jersey, and other hotspots. Unfortunately, as usual, with these bankrupt or close to it states, follow the money. The bigger the crisis, the more demand for government intervention in the form of money. I listened to Candace Owens this morning. An interesting perspective. Yeah. In case you don't know, Candace Owens is a COVID denier. She's a COVID-19 denier. So, anyway. And let me tell you, there'll be plenty of room for that discussion at the end of this. Okay, but I think as we all know, those pictures of refrigerator trucks outside of hospitals to create space for morgues, I mean, that's not a joke. And so, yeah, the question is, what's a crisis in New York City? Is that a crisis for the nation? And so anyway, interesting. But I do believe that the governor of New York, his press conference on TV on a daily basis, I don't know that that has been a good thing in terms of, and I know people say the same thing about the president, but New York's such a different case. And I think as the nation begins to footnote its coverage, then you're going to see that. So anyway, all right, let me get to some news stories. Carrier Roosevelt CO asked Navy to quarantine the entire crew ashore as a COVID-19 outbreak accelerates. Now, you know, this is a pretty crazy story in that somehow or other, the letter that was sent by the commanding officer of the Roosevelt wound up in given to, I want to say, the San Francisco Chronicle. So here's the article. The commanding officer of the USS Theodore Roosevelt asked U.S. Pacific Fleet leadership to take his crew off his carrier and send them into quarantine ashore on Guam. Captain Brett Crozier, C-R-O-Z-I-E-R, wrote Pacific Fleet leadership asking for more resources to effectively isolate his crew and fight the virus. A Navy official who verified the authenticity of the letter USNI News received on Tuesday. Contents of the letter were first reported by the San Francisco Chronicle on Tuesday. Last week, the carrier was sent pierside to Guam after three sailors tested positive for COVID-19 and were shipped to nearby hospitals. The ship was sent pierside to test sailors and isolate those who were infected from the rest of the crew. Quote, no one on the crew will be allowed to leave anywhere into Guam other than pierside. And we are already starting the process of testing 100% of the crew to ensure that they've got that contained. That statement from Acting Navy Secretary Thomas Maudley, I think is the pronunciation. Since then, the crew has been isolated to the pier and kept separate from the rest of the military and civilian population on the island while testing continued. Crozier said, from their experiences, the testing and the isolation regime has been ineffective due to tight quarters on the ship. And then here's his letter. Quote, we go to war with the force we have and fight sick. We never achieve a COVID-free Theodore Roosevelt, he wrote. There will be losses to the virus. He goes on, this requires strict adherence to CDC guidelines and a methodical approach to achieve a clean ship. A clean ship is required. Every sailor on board must be guaranteed virus-free, and the ship environment must be disinfected. One infected sailor introduced to the ship will spread the virus. Off-ship lodging in compliance with CDC and Navy guidance is required for over 4,000 sailors to achieve a clean ship and crew. Now the question is, how did this letter get to the San Francisco Chronicle? And many people speculated that Crozier sent it to him, or had somebody send it to him. The Navy said that there was kind of mixed messages out of the Navy relative to would he be punished for taking his case public. So the Navy right now plans to put the sailors from the Theodore Roosevelt in hotels on Guam, which are apparently empty. So congratulations to the hotels on Guam. So anyway, this fight's been going on. As of Wednesday afternoon, the acting secretary of the Navy said about 24% of the Roosevelt's crew, about 1,273 people, have been tested. Of those, 93 crew members tested positive, and 86 of these crew members were exhibiting symptoms, with 7 not showing symptoms yet. An additional 600 tests were negative, and the Navy is still waiting for results on the remaining tests. So anyway, a little bit of controversy surrounding your United States Navy and the Roosevelt. General Berger was out in public yesterday talking about the changes that he's proposed for the Marine Corps. Headline, Marines won't cut planned F-35 buy totals for now, but external review could change that. So now, what was proposed was the Marine Corps would reduce the number of Joint Strike Fighters per squadron from 16 down to 10 in each squadron. In his Force Design 2030 summary, the Commandant of the Marine Corps wrote, I am not convinced that we have a clear understanding yet of the F-35 capacity requirements for the future force. As a result, the service will seek at least one external assessment of our aviation plan relative to the National Defense Strategy. One external assessment? Interesting. Additionally, the report says, as described in congressional testimony, our continued pilot shortfalls are a factor we must consider and either scale programs of record accordingly or implement sustainable, affordable solutions. Other services face similar shortfalls. You know, we've gone through pilot shortages in the past, right? And I've never heard anybody talk about canceling an aircraft buy or a program or modifying it because of those shortages. They solved that problem. So anyway, General Berger, and you see a number of articles about things that he said when he was out and about yesterday. Here's another one. Top Marine says light armored reconnaissance is outmoded on the future battlefield. Now, the article, so how many future battlefields are there? Well, there's many. So it's outmoded and not suited for what? The South China Sea fight? Is it okay for the Korean Peninsula fight? I would think probably. Is it okay in Iran? I would think probably. Is it okay in many other parts of the world? I would think probably. The top Marine told reporters Wednesday that current layout and organization of light armored reconnaissance units were better equipped to handle other conflicts in the Middle East instead of rising near-peer rivals. Quote, light armored reconnaissance today is built great for another Desert Shield or Desert Storm. I don't see that likelihood as being very great. No question in my mind, when we're going up against a capable adversary, that it pays to be spread out and dispersed. Okay? That indicates a firm grasp of the obvious. What we have to do now is transition to a lighter footprint, more expeditionary, more in support of littoral environment, Berger said. Can the unit collect forward of itself, even if offshore into the water? So we're talking about drones, right? But again, every climb in place, and that's been the Marine Corps' utility to the nation. You start missing out on fights and watch how long the Marine Corps stays around. And so to me, defining the Marine Corps by one fight is not the way the history of the Marine Corps says you should do it. And then he's, and then here's another quote. Mobility inside the weapons engagement zone is a competitive advantage and an operational imperative. But we don't have that. And it's the Navy hasn't signed up to provide that. So, interesting. I mean, General Berger talks about theoretical stuff. And the problem is making real cuts when you don't have the future mobility platforms even conceptualized or funded yet. So, again, more to follow as this discussion continues. Next headline. This is what Marine Corps boot camp looks like during the pandemic. So, and you've seen the yellow footprints, right? And everybody on yellow footprints? Okay, now imagine this. When you're looking forward down the column, they're spaced out every other rank, right? So, every other set of footprints. And then laterally, there's two sets of footprints between recruits. So, that's what it looks like. So, a little bit more spread out. Changes, however, have been made, safety precautions implemented, and Paris Island will eventually, that is temporarily halted, will follow these measures and resume production. Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego recently published a series of photographs of newly arriving recruits with Bravo Company, 1st Recruit Training Battalion, depicting what training and reception looks like during a viral pandemic. And so you go through the pictures, you see them all spaced out. We need twice as many buses. It takes them twice as long to get through the phone line. Instead of being asshole to belly button in a hallway waiting for physicals, right? There's tape on the ground, right? Simple technological solutions. There's black, it looks like electrical tape on the ground. You step forward to the next tape, and it looks like the tape is about 10 feet apart. Right, the barber's got rubber gloves on and a mask. Drill instructors are staying away from the recruits. They're still yelling at them, but from a distance. So, actually, pretty interesting photograph. The story about the Marine Corps won't cut the planned F-35 buy for now. Okay, but an external review could change that. Interesting that he'd say, but there'll be only one external review. So I guess if you can, that's like bringing in a consultant. If I bring in the consultant, right? If I bring the consultant in that I hire, I bet he's going to say what I want him to say. So the question is, who consults? Blah, 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 blah. And so there's another story in Marine Corps Times written by Todd South. Headline, the Marine Corps has to get smaller to get better. And again, the Commandant has not laid out enough of the footnotes to all this. These are all his buzz phrases, but why did the Marine Corps get bigger? To get worse? So again, I mean, a lot of buzzwords get thrown around, not enough substance thrown around yet, in my opinion. Article in the National Interest. How many F-35s does the United States Marine Corps need? Written by a guy named David Axe. So, again, one would think that this would have been well thought out. Evidently not. Another article in Defense One. How the Marine Corps plans to become lighter, nimbler, and more unmanned. So, again, it's not a question of pivoting to the Pacific and doing this. It's about transforming the whole force for one fight and becoming irrelevant across the range of military options, and then missing fights and becoming irrelevant to the nation's defense. And then people looking at you saying, yeah, you know, maybe your day has come and gone. You're not what you used to be. And you've configured yourself for the least likely conflict that we'll ever fight. And you're all in on it. Congratulations. You're just not that necessary anymore. So anyway, I think it's, again, General Berger's got a job, and that is to sell, you know, what he's conceived to the rest of the Marine Corps. And I can tell you right now, the Marine Corps is not buying it. But there's not a whole lot of public pushback. You'll also notice that. Top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, 540 additional troops to deploy to the U.S.-Mexican border, right? And that's to support Border Patrol agents handling migrants who may have the COVID-19 virus, right? Number two, Navy's top admiral says miscommunications led to the release of the letter. How did a miscommunication get that letter in the hands of the San Francisco Chronicle? Does that mean I don't know. Anyway, that's interesting. Number three, with COVID-19 threat to increase, Air Force takes steps to protect its most important missions. They also moved up, after two suicides, they moved up the graduation time at the Air Force Academy. With COVID-19 threat to increase, Air Force takes steps to protect its most important missions. Air Force Chief of Staff Dave Goldfein ordered the leaders of East Air Force Major Command on April 1 to pivot towards essential tasks that may require additional manpower or other resources. Quote, I've got to repurpose some people from mission areas that are not essential to mission areas that are essential, and that's not just something you do with the flip of a switch. There are all kinds of individual decisions that are associated with a bigger decision. So the reset I'm talking about is a broader reset across the Air Force to make sure that we keep our mission up and operating. The Air Force has already begun to make some shifts in its posture to protect airmen from contracting the novel coronavirus, such as canceling training exercises, easing grooming standards, and ordering the early graduation of the Air Force Academy's 2020 class. As medical experts project an increase in the number of COVID-19 cases through April and May, the Air Force has come to believe that it must make long-term preparations to sustain critical tasks like combat and intelligence gathering operations, even in level 3 countries like Italy and Germany with widespread cases of coronavirus. So anyway, what that means is that, you know, if you're here in the United States, your job may be ended or put on hold, and you may be pulled out of it to go support another mission someplace else that has a higher priority. So Air Force getting ready to reshuffle the deck. Really interesting news. Yesterday, the president announced that the U.S. is deploying anti-drug naval ships and aircraft to off the coast of Venezuela. So you saw the Justice Department announce indictments, a few weeks ago. And now... you saw the Director of National Security yesterday during the kind of daily briefing they do talk about the amount of drugs that are coming in, the way they're coming in submarines, a lot of them. Interestingly enough, a huge tunnel found in San Diego with hundreds of millions of drugs in, dollars worth of drugs in it. And talking about that producers in Venezuela and south of Venezuela making arrangements with drug cartels in Mexico as sea lanes get closed down. So, I mean, to me, why aren't they those cartels, you know, labeled, you know, international terrorist organizations? It's what they are. I don't know why we're waiting for that. Number five, military memo from 2017 warned of pandemic's impact on combat readiness and risk of war. You know what that reminds me of? it reminds me of people going through stacks of intel assessments after 9/11 and then pulling one out and say, there it is. We should have seen it. Right? Hindsight's always 20/20. But when you rack it and stack it with your other priorities and what you have the opportunity to spend money on, that's where somebody's got to make a decision. And again, and then, so do I fund something that's, you know, has very, very low probability of happening? So write me the scenario in which this would happen. Well, there would be a country, let's just say China, because the last couple have come out of China, that unleashes something in their own country, and then it's transmitted around the world. And then you see slowly but surely every nation around the world restrict travel. And you'd be sitting at the table going, you got to be kidding me. That's never happened in our history. And you want me to fund that. Yeah, sorry, not. It doesn't break squelch. It's not going to happen. Yeah, right? And then somebody pulls that out of the sack and says, see, I told you, we missed it. Come on. No, they didn't miss it. They evaluated it. They ruled it as not probable. And in our list of 10 things, right, that we have, this didn't even make the list. Because that's how improbable it is. And I think a lot of people would say, airliners going into the jets going into the World Trade Centers were up there with that. Although there would be some people in the FBI that would dispute that, say that we had plenty of indications and warnings to know that was going to happen. One other thing. The president was on Twitter, took to Twitter yesterday, also spoke about it in his first part of his press conference yesterday because he had the Secretary of Defense, he had the CNO. I didn't see the chairman there. But anyway, he had NSA there who made his statement. I think that guy's name's O'Brien, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, he warned Iran that it will pay a very heavy price if somehow or other Iranian-sponsored forces attack Americans in Iraq or in the region. So the president, you know, went out of his way to be very visible in his warning to Iraq. So pretty interesting. Not sure what intelligence they had, but it must have been pretty good for him to go to that length. So that was pretty interesting. And is that Iran just attempting, given the internal state of Iranian affairs, is that them simply trying to get the great Satan to behave like the great Satan so you can take some pressure off the focus that the Iranian nation is focusing on our ineptability to govern? And we're scared shitless that there's going to be regime change. Is that there was a? I saw a story last week where I can't remember which one of them, but I mean the coronavirus is decimating the top leadership of the Republican Guards, the Iranian military, and evidently it's inside the leadership of the nation, the political leadership of the nation. So anyway, pretty interesting. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear the Lynch and Kenny event. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.